News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Question on the text line, Dan, when's the last time you did a game at LAD? I'm thinking to myself, I don't know.
Has it been that long?
And so in the 26th, this is the 26th year that we two knuckleheads have been doing without any justification as to why us.
Yeah.
But it's been a lot of fun, obviously. But many of the games back in the day were at LAD.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the games were Mobile County Public Schools, early season games between Williamson and Blount that would have, you'd have like 12,000 people there. It would almost be like a laid back, because the weather was warm, it'd be kind of a laid back baseball crowd. Mm. You know, it would just, they were there to watch the game. Crowds were great. And
great teams back then? Or?
Really good teams.
Okay.
Really good teams. And it was kind of a warm atmosphere, to be honest with you. You know, then you had the situation, I guess 2019 is when you had the shooting at
LAD. Has it been that long?
I think it has.
Man.
I think it has. So I'm sure I was at Baker the other night, and there was really excellent security there. So I think that's what they're doing at all the Mobile County Public Schools games that are at Mobile County Public Schools. We're doing less and less on the campuses. We're certainly at LAD now. And we kind of allow the Mobile County Public School system. They've got a broadcast team that does a really good job, mm-hmm. and they do a lot of those games, Al and Corey.
Yep.
So we've been doing more games across the Bay or St. Paul's or Saraland, which, mm-hmm. of course, get their own school system. So it'll be interesting. And I'll just report to you on Monday what happened and how things went down at LAD tomorrow night. I'm probably going to try to get there pretty early, maybe around 4:30, so I can get inside the stadium without any hassles. But
be careful. Don't eat a hot dog on your way in or take a swig of the Diet Coke you're getting ready to drink as you head on in to broadcast, because no tailgating for this game, which
I guess
tell
me about that. So that's I don't know that I get – let me think if I can remember tailgating ever being at LAD where it was a thing.
So Fox 10.
I mean, for high school.
Right. Brendan Kirby wrote up a story on Fox 10 last night, said there will be no tailgating for this game tomorrow night. LAD Peebles Stadium made the announcement. And this is not the first time that LAD Peebles Stadium has made an announcement. You might remember LAD Peebles joining us with
spoke out.
We gave LAD Peebles a voice many years ago.
But
the officials with LAD Peebles Stadium, I should say, made the announcement in a now edited Facebook post. And Brendan says it has some folks upset, but school system officials said that while tailgating may take place at high school campuses, they have never had tailgating at LAD for high school games.
Okay, see, I think that's probably true.
So they write on the message from the LAD account, which the school system owns, LAD Peebles, there is no tailgating for this game. Anyone trying to tailgate will be removed from the property immediately. You've been warned. And then Brendan continues, yesterday an edited version listing game day security rules has replaced the original post. School system spokeswoman Renee Phillips said the district had not approved the original message. Some people responded to the original message with complaints. Some suggested it was insulting. Some questioned why two schools appeared to be singled out. Some wondered whether race was a factor, since both schools are predominantly black. And Brendan writes, LAD responded with a post from Fox 10 News' sister station in Mississippi, WLOX, reporting on a tailgating ban at a high school there in the wake of a violent Friday last week at high school football games in Mississippi. And we covered those on the show earlier this week. Being proactive is key, LAD said in response to one commenter. It's so weird that it's the LAD Peebles Stadium account doing the commenting here. But he also says, Sherry Dillahay-McDade, the school board member who represents the area that includes LAD, said this was a decision made by the administration at Williamson because it's standardized testing week. She said normally people buy tailgating passes, which requires teachers to go to the stadium early to set up and then clean up afterward. And I'm guessing that's at Williamson games.
But maybe
they played on campus.
Right. So it's got to be, it's their home game, so they'll have the same responsibilities at LAD, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds that way. She said it would be too much of a distraction during testing week, that the teachers won't be able to get out like they normally would because of the tests. Quote, it's a big game, but our first priority as a system and as a school was to make sure that all of our testing procedures were in place. Last, and then Brendan goes on to write about the terrible violence in Leland, Mississippi, and then another shooting that he said took place 3 hours south of there after last week's games in Mississippi. We'll see. And by the way, that shooting was 2021 at Ladd Peoples.
2021.
Williamson and Viger. So it's still been a while. But
yeah. And you know what? I have been there since. I'll take that back. COVID year, maybe. Maybe a Williamson UMS game in 2021. Or we had a COVID year game with few people there between Faith Academy and Williamson, I believe. That was around the time that AC got the job.
Okay.
AC
Antonio Coleman.
Yeah, but around there, 2022. But it's been a while. But I can remember so many, 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 can't count them games that Jim and I and the crew were at Ladd Peoples Stadium. It was almost like the home base.
Yeah. Well, it should be a good one tomorrow night, and I'm hoping not just for, you know, safety all the way around, but a really good game. That's what I'm hoping for between the 1 and 2 ranked teams in 5A.
It's almost hard to point out, and we'll get away from football here, but just let me say that it's like, as you're looking over this game, Dan, what do you know? Give me a little synopsis. Well, they're both undefeated, and it's hard to point out to a couple of people on each team, like, here are the key players, because they have so much talent, including the top edge rusher in the state of Alabama, who's committed to Alabama, plays for Viger.
Well, Viger, you have Jabarius Guerrer. I think he's right behind Tank Jones in the rankings, though, as far as...
Yeah, okay,
right.
Number two.
But I think you said, did you tell me, Williamson, all 11 defensive players have scholarship offers?
All 11.
Will be? Yeah.
Yep. All
That's
11
crazy.
Defensive players, regardless of their grade, some are younger. They've got a lot of young talent, too, but they've already been offered to play in the college level.
That is some talent.
All 11.
And to kind of transition, because I've been looking at this since it was published yesterday and have been wanting to talk about the CHOOSE Act. And there were some questions about what that AHSAA meeting would be about, as they called all of the private schools that participate in AHSAA activities, called them to Montgomery for a meeting yesterday with the AHSAA director, Heath Harmon. And they discussed the reclassification that's coming up in December.
Right.
You know, they have the multiplier for private schools, but apparently they also discussed this kind of tiff that's going on between the state legislature and the governor and the AHSAA. It sounded like a kind of temperature taking session. They were, from what I've read, they were seeing how the private schools feel about reclassification and this whole CHOOSE Act thing. So I'm not sure whether they came to any agreement or conclusion as a group yesterday.
Kind of what they were looking for.
Unity,
and I don't know why it was. Yeah, exactly. I don't know why it was the private group only, but I guess because they could discuss reclassification, mm-hmm. which happens every couple of years. And it has to do with your numbers and your success. Mm-hmm. Like, success can keep you. Can lift you higher.
Keep moving you up. Yeah.
But also, there did seem to be part of the agenda was all for one and one for all.
Yeah. That's how I read into
me
it
too.
A little bit. But these stats came out. Now, to kind of get away from athletics, although the CHOOSE Act does play a role in that fight, Trisha Powell Crane with Alabama Daily News writes, in the first year of Alabama's CHOOSE Act, which is the School Choice Act that went into effect this school year, a small group of private schools are already seeing the majority of their students using the state-funded ESAs, the Education Savings Accounts. Data obtained and analyzed exclusively by Alabama Daily News that came from the Alabama Department of Revenue on the 12,500 private school students using ESAs this year. So that's how many. 12,500 private school students are on the CHOOSE Act plan. And it shows that 8 of the 245 participating private schools have more than half of their maximum student enrollment funded through ESAs.
Wow.
Now, that sounds big, but from what I've seen, those 8 schools that are majority CHOOSE Act students have very small enrollment numbers,
yeah.
and also have very particular niches, I guess, or, you know, things they're trying to accomplish as
like
a school.
Dyslexia school is one of those,
yeah,
for instance?
Several of them, I believe. So Trisha Powell Crane writes, another 23 schools showed that between one-third and one-half of their students, if they were at maximum enrollment, are covered by ESAs. And that's part of what's surprising to me, too, how many of the private schools around here, what percentage of their current enrollment are getting these CHOOSE Act funds. So she writes about Dyslexia Services of Baldwin County. I had a lot of pressure on me to read that correctly, by the way. Dyslexia Services of Baldwin County in Robertsdale. And ALDOR's numbers, the Department of Revenue, shows that 16 of the 20 students, so only 20 students enrolled there, 16 are ESA recipients, which is 80% of their maximum enrollment capacity. The school specializes in teaching children with dyslexia, and Director Suzanne Avery is thrilled that the CHOOSE Act has allowed families to access services they couldn't afford before. This sounds to me exactly what this was meant for. In some ways, but in a very big way. She said it opened the door for a lot of kids that couldn't afford this type of service. The school was established as a nonprofit tutoring center in 2012, then expanded into a full-time school just 3 years ago, moved into a larger building before the start of the year after seeing an increased demand for enrollment. And tuition for this dyslexia services in Robertsdale, Dyslexia Services of Baldwin County, $6,500 annually, $675 a month, and that's within the $7,000 annual limit on the CHOOSE Act.
Yeah.
And also they say these schools' after-school tutoring can be paid for with ESA funds, and that's just one of a handful of private schools across the state dedicated to serving students with dyslexia. Avery said students generally attend for 3 years before returning to their previous school. It sounds like success to me.
It does.
The CHOOSE Act gives priority to the first 500 ESAs for students with special needs. Avery says that's made a difference for families seeking specialized instruction. Applications for the 26-27 school year open in January. And then I think after next school year is when they'll open the CHOOSE Act, if the funds are there, statewide, or at least really open up the...
No restrictions on terms of the money that your family income would be?
Right. Alabama Daily News previously reported 9,600 students attending private schools using the ESAs were in private schools last year. So if there are, 12,500 using them now and 9,600 were enrolled last year, that's about, you know, just under 3,000 new private school students that have taken advantage of the CHOOSE Act funds.
Mention those requirements again, the requirements to qualify at this point.
So at this point, and for and I'm going down this chart, let me get past it because I want to tell you about some of the schools around here.
Okay.
The CHOOSE Act created ESAs worth $7,000 per student to cover tuition and approved education expenses at private schools. And the law also allows homeschooled students to receive $2,000 per child for approved educational expenses. That's capped at $4,000 per family. And revenue data shows almost 6,000 homeschooled students were awarded the $2,000 ESAs. An additional 1,300 homeschool students applied but did not receive it because their families had already reached the cap. The first 2 years of CHOOSE Act participation, so this year and then next year, are limited by income eligibility, which means income cannot exceed 300% of the federal poverty level. And I looked up the federal poverty level and what that basically for a family of four, 300% of the federal poverty level is somewhere around $96,000 annually.
Oh, $100,000. Okay? All right.
And then participation, they say, so far appears concentrated in the lower grades, suggesting families are more willing to commit to private school for younger children as the new funding program takes shape. That's part of this, too. You're moving students away from friends, and that does, it is a factor for people that are looking to make this move.
You know, and we're going to keep with the numbers here and keep with the schools, but on the text line, or you can call. If you actually have a student involved in this and you're going through it yourself, we can speculate, but you could tell us more succinctly what the experience has been like for you. 251-343-0106.
So before we go to the break, let me just, I assumed maybe that the private schools around here had students on the CHOOSE Act plan, but that it was a, at this point, really small number of the students that are enrolled at each of these schools. I was kind of blown away by this. You look at, let's start, so McGill Toolin says enrollment of 750 and that 145 students are receiving CHOOSE Act funds. So about 19% of the students enrolled at McGill are receiving CHOOSE Act funds. And that's pretty standard if you look around our area. Mobile Christian, say 20% of the students receiving ESA funds. You look at, well, Little Flower Catholic School, which has a much smaller maximum enrollment number, but 38% of their students receiving ESAs. St. Luke's is a lower number. About 8% of the students at St. Luke's are on the education savings accounts. I don't see St. Paul's here. Maybe they didn't take part. Cottage Hill, 19%.
Wow, that number's pretty standard, between like 15 and 20%.
Yeah, Faith Academy, 23%.
Interesting.
Let me go up to some Baldwin counties that I had here, too. Let's see, Foley, Snook Christian, 16% of the students on ESA. St. Michael Catholic in Fairhope, 16%. I had a couple more pulled up here. Let's look. So Daphne has a couple. Christ the King, 14%. Renaissance School of the Eastern Shore, 26%. I was kind of, I don't know if blown away is the right word for that, but I didn't think that that high percentage of those enrolled at schools this early in the Choose Act program
were
already receiving Choose Act funds.
I agree, and I wouldn't mind having that young lady on our show to explain those numbers a little more clearly to us, because would that indicate that like 19% new students in McGill?
Or no, not new students. Many were already there.
Oh, they
but
were there,
now
but
receiving
they
Choose Act
they
funds.
Weren't using the funds.
I don't have the numbers on how many new students have gone to private schools around here.
They're taking advantage of the funds, though, and they qualify for them.
That's correct.
Eight. I don't know what hour it is. Clearly. Hey, 8:22, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Morning from Dan and Dalton, 8:26. Today is the day. Been talking about it all week. The Gulf Coast's largest industrial reverse trade show. It's sponsored by PEP, Partners for Environmental Progress. Starts at 1 o'clock at Fort Whiting Auditorium. Chance to make your sales really take off. You're going to speak face-to-face with everybody you want to talk to. Decision makers, buyers from 30 major manufacturing companies, shipbuilders, health providers, construction, engineering firms, as well as government agencies. Tickets right now, you can go online, pepmobile.org. That's pepmobile.org. Starts today at 1 at Fort Whiting Auditorium.
Looking at the text line, which you can jump in on at 251-343-0106. Talk with Rob Holbert here in a minute. Texter here said, wouldn't it be funny if one of our Mardi Gras organizations hooked up a float dressed as kings and threw stuff at the people attending the No Kings protest coming up Saturday? I noted Summer Poole at WKRG reporting on the Indivisible Mobile No Kings protest coming up Saturday down by Government Plaza. They're going with a Halloween theme, and they're asking protesters to wear black or Halloween costumes. If that's a nationwide thing, I'm going ahead and predicting that'll be a problem on Saturday.
Also, is your heart into it if the protest lasts an hour and a half?
Hmm.
Right? It's 4 to 5:30.
Yes. So you're saying they need more time?
Well, yeah. If your heart's into a real protest, wouldn't you be out there like all day or 1 to 5 or something?
Did they have to clear it with the city? I don't know. I don't know how that whole thing went down.
No, I don't know.
A lot of folks talking about Talladega's race this Sunday because we were worried about the weather. 1 p.m. start for Talladega. This texter said, but the drinking starts at 6 a.m. I'm just wondering which day at 6 a.m. does the drinking start?
6 a.m. tomorrow.
Texter here, when my son played for McGill, we tailgated every time. Everywhere the game was, that must be something new since the shooting, but we tailgated everywhere we went.
Yeah, and McGill was one high school that I can say, and there are others, but I remember McGill parents tailgating.
Yep. Texter here, and I think this is, okay, not Cheesewagon. Cheesewagon told us, crash eastbound I-10 at Rangeline. This texter says, intersection of Hillcrest and Cottage Hill completely clear now. For the ESAs, the school choice thing we just spent the first segment talking about, Backstrap Stacker says St. Paul's is taking zero students, and I believe the same for UMS. They're not on the chart. Brandon says a lot of the private school parents don't qualify this year because they make too much. The earnings threshold gets higher next year.
Yeah.
Choose Act saved my bacon paying for three kids. That's not – what's surprising to me is how many did qualify this year. I didn't think that around 15 to 20% of the private schools who are participating around here, that much enrollment would be on the Choose Act funds.
Qualified and took advantage of it.
Qualified, yeah. And Fish River Frank, so we're going to have a built-in excuse to wear a mask. Yes, with the No Kings protest, that's my point. The Halloween party while you're protesting Trump, I think if that's nationwide, that could be a problem. 934 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. We'll talk with Rob Hulbert from Lanyat here in just a minute. First, it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing great. Sun's out. Can't complain. And I'm hoping I can get over and just browse the lot. I like to do it from time to time at McConnell Automotive. Love looking at the new vehicles. And you have a great selection of pre-owned vehicles as well.
That's right. We got some pre-owned vehicles. McConnellAutomotive.com. Got those GM certifieds out front, which gives you an extra 12-12 on the factory warranty. Bumps that powertrain up to 100,000 miles. Everybody loves that. And we got some new trucks coming in. I've been out of town, came back, and we got a bunch of new trucks coming in. So we got 0% on some of those, and got some half tons and three-quarter tons. Sitting here looking at the new body style Acadia. Those doggone things are nice.
Yeah.
Got some AT4s out there, Yukons, and I mean, we got a great selection of them. So, y'all, like I said, check everything out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. You see anything you like, give us a call, 251-476-4141.
All right. We appreciate it, Louie. Have a great day.
Hey, come see us. Thank y'all.
All right. That's Louie Arata. Go see him. He's at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65. And the website that he mentioned, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Rob Hulbert with Lanyap. Frog in my throat. Just in time to introduce Rob Hulbert from Lanyap. Good morning.
You okay there, Dan?
Yeah, I don't know. It's been a long morning. You doing okay, Rob?
I'm doing great.
A lot to get to in the latest issue of Lanyap, which is on stands now, and all of the articles up at lanyapmobile.com. And why don't we start with the cover story? That's a good a place as any to start. And Scott Johnson, focusing on the women on the bench with Mobile County, the women judges, seven of them that were profiled this week.
Yeah, it's been kind of an amazing growth in the amount of female judges we've had that we have now compared to just even like, you know, 10, 20 years ago. It has grown tremendously. And so, you know, we thought it was a good time to highlight that and just talk to them. And Scott reached out to all of the judges and they all responded. He wrote the story about it, you know, basically on what they wrote, but you can also go and read their actual Q&A, online as well. So, you know, if you really want to delve into everything they had to say, that it's all there as well.
You know, that's interesting to me, Rob, that all seven were happy to respond. That doesn't always happen in journalism, does it?
No, they were very happy. I think they liked the I think they were happy we were doing the story, and it is a big change. And you know, I talked to a judge just yesterday, a male judge, who said he wouldn't be surprised if in a few years that the majority of the judges on our circuit are female. So it's just grown very, very rapidly in recent years. And that's, you know, to talk about kind of the differences for them, you know, as they pursue their legal careers, and, you know, some of them who were kind of lone wolves for a while and have, you know, had to, you know, were the only females on the bench, or one or two or three, and yeah, so they have a lot more people on the bench who kind of have been through the same things they've been through.
And it's kind of like not necessarily, you know, apples to apples, but I think of and not just because they're female, but, you know, Sports Illustrated, they would preview like the up and coming athletes. I think often that role is kind of a springboard to furthering the political career sometimes. So some of these judges that were profiled here may have a higher profile here in the next few years, depending on elections.
You look at Sarah Stewart with the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she came from the circuit court. And so, you know, we've had a lot of, it's a lot of growth from just municipal judges to circuit judges, district court judges. It's pretty impressive.
Good stuff.
And they're an impressive group of ladies.
Yeah.
That's cool. I've not read that, but I need to for sure. I was just kind of blown away that all seven uniformly said, yeah, I'll be happy to talk to you.
And I think you should familiarize yourself with every judge in the circuit. It's just a good thing for you. I think it'd be a good idea.
You'd be surprised at my relationship with judges through the years, but anyway.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised at all.
I'll dig in on that cover story this week. Also, former Senator Richard Shelby, I guess 91 now, and a bit of a celebration for the official deepening of the port. They got it as deep as they wanted, and they're already loading up the ships even more as they head out with cargo. But tons of dignitaries in town. Notably, no Governor Ivey. She left a video message, but celebrating the port, and also tip of the cap to Shelby for what he was able to bring down.
Yeah, he was there and talked about how it was a visit to Singapore so many years ago that convinced him that the port needed to be deepened and to make us more competitive, and that was a big part of him pushing for the funding to help get that done. It was surprising that Ivy was not there, I suppose. It's the biggest project, one of the biggest projects in the state over the past many years, and it is a little surprising that she wasn't there, but, they wouldn't really tell us why she wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
she had a scheduling conflict. I'm not sure what that was, but it was, there were a lot of folks there, and, it does make us more competitive with the deepest port on the Gulf now.
I don't think anybody has a problem. No one's got really the problem with getting the port more ready for international business and all, and deepening it. But the process, I mean, right there, the backdrop is the
mud dumping.
You got Baykeeper also is part of that story, talking about, hey, congratulations, tip of the cap to you. Now stop dumping in the bay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the ongoing issue, because, this thing's now 50 feet deep, but it's got to stay 50 feet deep.
Yeah, right.
As you talked about in the story, the first ship that came out has a draft of 48 feet, so not a lot of clearance.
Right.
And so there's, you have to keep it at that depth, which means you're going to have consistent, constant dredging going on. And I think we had, there's supposed to be 90 million tons of dredge materials dredged out over the next 10 years or something like that. I may have that number wrong, but it's a big number.
Yeah, 90 million cubic yards.
Cubic yards, okay. So and so you have over the next 10 years that the plan is to take that and distribute it throughout the bay. There's a lot of folks who don't really see that as a good plan. And, I think that is something that has to be really looked at strongly. I mean, personally, I think we ought to go back to taking it offshore for a while and see what happens versus just studying. And you can always get a study that says this is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But, the original study that the Corps of Engineers had a long time ago was that it was not a good idea to do that. And then it's changed, and of course, it's also the cheaper thing to do is to dump it in the bay.
And I think cheaper by a long way, right? I mean, it's much, much cheaper. Those are real dollars.
It is, but it's the reality is. I mean, I know that it's important. The port is obviously extremely important to our community, but so is the bay, and so is keeping the bay functional for everybody else, and hopefully that. There's a way to make both of those things happen.
I thought the compromise was going to be that they were going to find the money
to take it offshore,
or where it wasn't an added burden. They were going to find that money for the Corps of Engineers. I thought that was the latest idea that maybe had some life to it.
Well, I mean, I think that's a plan a hope, but I don't believe there's any money for it at this point. Mm-hmm. And there's. Obviously, the best things to find for it is, to find some uses for it that are, fill in and things like that that we need, do some things that really are helpful with it. That's the ideal purpose of it. But, it can't all probably head that way. And so, we need to figure out something. It doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense just to me, logically, to just dump it back in the bay where it washes right back down into the channel, but I'm not an expert in those things, but it just seems logical.
I do think Governor Ivey missed a golden opportunity with 91-year-old Richard Shelby there. She's practically a spring chicken at 80 years old. Yeah. She could have really kind of shown, you know, her youthfulness.
Well, they could have had NFL combine 40-yard dash.
I think, you know, it would have been something. You know, I think hopefully there's another opportunity to get them together.
Also, blight, that's a thing you've been talking about for some time now. And in downtown Mobile, that's the discussion with city council. As they push this back week to week, part of me wonders if they're not pushing it until Mayor-elect Spiro is in office, but I know Kyle Hamrick, writing on the council as he does so well every week, and Ben Reynolds this week said he wanted to push it back a week. He doesn't feel that having the same kind of requirements for a owner of a 20,000 square foot vacant property should be held to the same standards as someone with a 1,000 square foot vacant property, and that one is more of an issue than the other. He's trying to kind of want to clear things up, and I guess make it more fair, but they're asking for another week before they vote on this.
You know, I guess that's, you know, there's a point to that, but there's also a point to, if you're right next door to a 2,000 square foot derelict building, it's affecting you as well. So I hope, you know, as the biggest issue to me of all of it is, you know, regardless of whatever we come up with, the city's going to have to enforce it. And that's the bigger issue. I mean, it's, we can make these rules, but if we don't enforce them, if we don't really crack some heads on it, then it's not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's already stuff that could be done that hasn't, you know, I think there's been opportunities in the past to take care of some of this, but, you know, hopefully what Mayor Stimson is trying to get done will get implemented, whether it's before he leaves office or after, but I think it give the city an opportunity to take care of some of this stuff, because you're never going to see downtown become what it could be with retail and things like that without cleaning some of this mess up. And I mean, it is a problem. I mean, when you go down, if you walk around down there, the buildings that are, you know, that nobody's in, or they're vacant, or people have just kind of left, they collect trash and broken bottles and broken windows. And, you know, it adds to the general, you know, downturn of the area.
I wanted to get your take on this, because I've been thinking about it a lot lately, and I know Kyle Hamrick wrote about this proposed St. Francis Street Hotel will go about a block away from Bienville Square, right there next to Bob's Downtown Restaurant. It just seems to me, and we saw it with the bank just a week ago, and trying to put a drive-through in this bank. I forget which part of downtown Mobile.
St. Louis Street.
There's always so much pushback from the historical preservation societies and just community members, because they want a certain look for businesses that come downtown. How many have been turned away over the years because it's not the right aesthetic or just doesn't fit the vibe? I mean, is that hindering us in fighting this blight?
Man, sure. I think, you know, you look at the Gayfer building. You know, the Gayfer building was one that, you know, everybody got up in arms about, even though if you look over in New Orleans, the projects that those people had in New Orleans looks great. But, you know, it was, you know, low income. It was something for people who didn't make a lot of money, I guess, is the big thing. And, you know, and that just turned into it's going to turn into, you know, a slum or something. And so now we don't have anything. We've still got a gigantic building that is, you know, falling in on itself.
Right.
Versus something that probably could have been useful for people. You know, I think, you know, a lot of what they had planned was not, you know, government assistant type housing, but a lot of just low income housing, people who work in the community who maybe don't make a tremendous amount of money.
Yeah, it made sense to me, Rob, because that could be all the service industry people that work downtown could live downtown.
Yeah, and I think that was the plan. But, you know, so you look at that and you look at other things where the NIMBYs, the Not In My Backyard people, it gets, the voices get pretty loud about what they won't take or what they don't want. And you know, often that's kind of the first thing that we hear. There's a lot of pushback on these things. And so, you know, is it better to have a burned out, you know, 200,000 square foot building on Bienville Square, or is it better to have a project there that is being taken care of? Or is it better to have an empty, you know, a vacant lot on St. Louis Street, or is it better to have a hotel?
Yeah. All questions that need to be answered. And I don't know if maybe Mayor-elect Spiro Charagatis, a committee will be put together. For all I know, maybe there already is.
You're going to head the committee.
No way.
It'll be a blue ribbon, probably a blue ribbon.
Yeah.
Rob, great stuff as always. I mean, I'm impressed every week the stories that your team is able to dig in and report about. For folks who want to sign up online, I think that's the best way. How can they get it done?
Okay, you can go to lanyapmobile.com, sign up for Lanyap Daily. It's a dollar for the first month. It's $9 a month after that. It's 30 cents a day, folks.
Cheap, cheap. Good
Very
deal.
Very inexpensive, yep.
All right, Rob, thanks a bunch, and we'll talk again in a week. Yeah.
All right. Y'all have a great weekend.
Rob Holbert.
Tough doing the math there. You know?
7 days is a week.
What is Thursday and then next Thursday? Oh, let me think about that.
LanyapMobile.com. And coming back, we'll get to the rest of our texts on the text line and also tell you who's coming up on Jeff Poor's show. That's on the way.
Good morning. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings at 8:54. And Jeff Poor, the Jeff Poor show. He's got his program on the way a little after 9.
Yeah, he'll have former State Senator Phil Williams on in hour number 1. April Marie Fogel with 1819 News in hour number 2. And then from ALCAP, Greg Davis joins Jeff in hour number 3. And let's get to the text line here. A lot of texts this morning.
We've got Jason says, I'm not a NIMBY. That's what Rob was talking about, not in my backyard. No, I'm a proud NIMBY, and I think most are. Who wants more traffic and noise with no benefits? We all cherish peace and quiet. So that was talking about things that are turned away from being built in downtown Mobile by the people who live down there currently or do business down there currently.
Yeah, but I mean, there's going to have to be some kind of balance, right? If there's enough of a push to grow the, I guess, economic zone down there, have more businesses come in, bring more people to live downtown.
The only one that I know that was a turnaway was the
gas station
right there at Government and Broad.
That was the only one that was officially turned away, but there's always so much pressure put on these businesses that are looking to relocate or move. I just wonder if there's been more that have been, and maybe not just because the people downtown don't want new businesses, but I've heard from so many of you how difficult it is to get through that process, through the historical, you know, code and everything like that. So
the last big one that was built, I believe, was the one on Bienville Square now, the hotel that's right there.
Okay.
And it kind of blends in well, I think. Nice. That also, a few years before that, on like Hotel Row on Royal Street, closer to the FBI building, a hotel was built there as
well. Gotcha.
Pretty big properties.
Brandon, wanting to remind folks, the Wild Game Cook-Off is today at Five Rivers. That's awesome. And reminder, also Smoke on the Farm. We talked about it some earlier, but out at Mason Hills in Grand Bay, Mason Hills Farm, they have Smoke on the Farm tomorrow and Saturday. A bunch of great food, live music, even a car show on Saturday. I watched a lot of the close Bama, South Carolina game last year when
there.
I was there at Smoke on the Farm.
Yeah, so that starts in the afternoon tomorrow, closer to like quitting time, right?
Starts at 5 tomorrow, okay. And then Saturday they'll get after it starting at 10 a.m. Fish River Frank, well, I read that one. He said, so we're going to have a built-in excuse to wear a mask, talking about the No Kings protest, encouraging people to wear Halloween costumes or wear black during the protests on Saturday. Haywood said, I believe Mobile has a law forbidding masks in public outside of Mardi Gras. Texter here. Let's see. Can y'all find out how we can get paid by Soros or somebody? Do I have to take an attitude quiz to qualify? Can you get us a cheat sheet? And then says, I think you guys should have a guest DJ day, like the Tom Petty channel on satellite radio. You mean to come in and take one of our jobs? Who would be the first guest DJ we'd have on here? I mean, we have guest hosts. One of us are ill or out, but
I mean, they're talking about just the average everyday listener. One of those could come in and just start running their mouth.
I think we tried that a long time ago, and I'm not sure if it worked out so well.
Well, that tells you it was a complete failure. No, I don't know. I'm open to anything. What
doesn't have metas wondering out at
brain surgery over here.
Out at Allegri Farm Market in Daphne's wondering about the tomatoes they don't need any longer, whether those can be used at the No Kings protest and be thrown this Saturday.
Everything at Allegri is so fresh, you can't find anything that fits in that category for tomatoes to be thrown at people in Scooby-Doo outfits or whatever they're going to be wearing down there.
Leo, talking about the port, says, don't forget to thank people buying gas in Alabama for paying for the port to be dredged.
Indeed.
For those that didn't know. Yep.
Gas
big
tax.
Part of it. We should have all been up there with Richard Shelby this week. I'm right there with you, Leo. I mean, he helped it along the way, but we really kind of funded it.
Yeah, and we did.
And
every time you fill her up, you paid for the port.
Brian says, how long is Mobile going to beat the dead horse that is downtown Blight? Well, they're trying to revive the horse. That's the whole thing. And as long as the conversation continues there at city council and in the mayor's office, that's how long that dead horse is going to be beat, or until the Blight situation is turned around, I guess. King of All Names Texters, peace and quiet is no excuse for Blight. And Mike is requesting Ricky for our first DJ day.
Okay.
I shouldn't have even read that, Mike. Thanks.
That's a non-starter. 8:59, Dan and Dalton. We'll see you tomorrow beginning at 6 a.m. on Mobile Morning.